The Thunderstorm. At the corner of an otherwise ordinary West Berlin street, under the canopy of a linden in full bloom, I was enveloped by a fierce fragrance. Masses of mist were ascending in the night sky, and when the last star-filled hollow had been absorbed, the wind, a blind phantom, covering his face with his sleeves, swept low through the deserted street. In lusterless darkness, over the iron shutter of a barber shop, its suspended shield, a gilt shaving basin, began swinging like a pendulum. I came home and found the wind waiting for me in the room. It banged the casement window and staged a prompt reflux when I shut the door behind me. Under my window there was a deep courtyard where, in the daytime, shirts crucified on sun-bright clotheslines shone through the lilac bushes. Out of that yard voices would rise now and then, the melancholy barking of ragmen or empty-bottle buyers, sometimes the wail of a crippled violin, and once an obese blonde woman stationed herself in the center of the yard and broke into such lovely song that maids leaned out of all the windows, bending their bare necks. Then, when she had finished, there was a moment of extraordinary stillness. Only my landlady, a slatternly widow, was heard sobbing and blowing her nose in the corridor. In that yard now a stifling gloom swelled, but then the blind wind, which had helplessly slithered into its depths, once again began reaching upward, and suddenly it regained its sight, swept up, and in the amber apertures of the black wall opposite, the silhouettes of arms and disheveled heads began to dart, as escaping windows were being caught and their frames resonantly and firmly locked. The lights went out. The next moment an avalanche of dull sound, the sound of distant thunder, came into motion and started tumbling through the dark violet sky. And again all grew still as it had when the beggar woman finished her song, her hands clasped to her ample bosom. In this silence I fell asleep, exhausted by the happiness of my day, a happiness I cannot describe in writing, and my dream was full of you. I woke up because the night had begun crashing to pieces. A wild, pale glitter was flying across the sky like a rapid reflection of colossal spokes. One crash after another rent the sky. The rain came down in a spacious and sonorous flow. I was intoxicated by those bluish tremors, by the keen, volatile chill. I went up to the wet window ledge and inhaled the unearthly air, which made my heart ring like glass. Ever nearer, ever more grandly, the prophet's chariot rumbled across the clouds. The light of madness, of piercing visions, illumined the nocturnal world. The metal slopes of roofs, the fleeing lilac bushes. The thunder god, a white-haired giant with a furious beard blown back over his shoulder by the wind, dressed in the flying folds of a dazzling raiment, stood, leaning backward in his fiery chariot, restraining with tensed arms his tremendous jet-black steeds, their manes a violet blaze. They had broken away from the driver's control. They scattered sparkles of crackling foam. The chariot careened, and the flustered prophet tugged at the reins in vain. His face was distorted by the blast and the strain. The whirlwind, blowing back the folds of his garment, bared a mighty knee. The steeds tossed their blazing manes and rushed on, ever more violently, down, down along the clouds. Then, with thunderous hooves, they hurtled across a shiny rooftop. The chariot lurched. Elijah staggered, and the steeds, maddened by the touch of mortal metal, sprang skyward again. The prophet was pitched out. One wheel came off. From my window I saw its enormous fiery hoop roll down the roof, teeter at the edge, and jump off into darkness, while the steeds, dragging the overturned chariot, were already speeding along the highest clouds. The rumble died down, and the stormy blaze vanished in livid chasms. The thunder god, who had fallen onto the roof, rose heavily. His sandals started slipping. He broke a dormer window with his foot, grunted, and with a sweep of his arm grasped a chimney to steady himself. He slowly turned his frowning face as his eyes searched for something, probably the wheel that had flown off its golden axle. Then he glanced upward, his fingers clutching at his ruffled beard, shook his head crossly. This was probably not the first time that it happened, and, limping slightly, began a cautious descent. In great excitement, I tore myself away from the window, hurried to put on my dressing gown, and ran down the steep staircase straight to the courtyard. The storm had blown over, but a waft of rain still lingered in the air. To the east, an exquisite pallor was invading the sky. The courtyard, which from above had seemed to brim with dense darkness, contained, in fact, nothing more than a delicate melting mist. On its central patch of turf, darkened by the damp, a lean, stoop-shouldered old man in a drenched robe stood muttering something and looking around. Upon seeing me, he blinked angrily and said, "That you, Elisha?" I bowed. The prophet clucked his tongue, scratching the while his bald brown spot. "Lost the wheel. Find it for me, will you?" The rain had now ceased. Enormous flame-colored clouds collected above the roofs. The shrubs, the fence, the glistening kennel were floating in the bluish, drowsy air around us. We groped for a long time in various corners. The old man kept grunting, hitching up the heavy hem of his robe, splashing through the puddles with his round-toed sandals, and a bright drop hung from the tip of his large, bony nose. As I brushed aside a low branch of lilac, I noticed on a pile of rubbish, amid broken glass, a narrow-rimmed iron wheel that must have belonged to a baby carriage. The old man exhaled warm relief above my ear. Hastily, even a little brusquely, he pushed me aside and snatched up the rusty hoop. With a joyful wink, he said, "So that's where it rolled." Then he stared at me. His white eyebrows came together in a frown. And, as if remembering something, he said in an impressive voice, "Turn away, Elisha." I obeyed, even shutting my eyes. I stood like that for a minute or so, and then could not control my curiosity any longer. The courtyard was empty, except for the old shaggy dog with its graying muzzle that had thrust its head out of the kennel and was looking up, like a person, with frightened hazel eyes. I looked up, too. Elijah had scrambled onto the roof, the iron hoop glimmering behind his back. Above the black chimneys a curly, auroral cloud loomed like an orange-hued mountain, and beyond it, a second and a third. The hushed dog and I watched together as the prophet, who had reached the crest of the roof, calmly and unhurriedly stepped upon the cloud and continued to climb, treading heavily on masses of mellow fire. Sunlight shot through his wheel, whereupon it became at once huge and golden, and Elijah himself now seemed robed in flame, blending with the paradisal cloud on which he walked higher and higher until he disappeared in a glorious gorge of the sky. Only then did the decrepit dog break into a hoarse mourning bark. Ripples ran across the bright surface of a rain puddle. The light breeze stirred the geraniums on the balconies. Two or three windows awakened. In my soaked bed-slippers and worn dressing gown, I ran out into the street to overtake the first sleepy tram car, and pulling the skirts of my gown around me, and laughing to myself as I ran, I imagined how, in a few moments, I would be in your house and start telling you about that night's mid-air accident and the cross old prophet who fell into my yard.